Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 242. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, if I dance to that, I can work off some of this turkey.
Yeah, I am the dessert. Phil Wilson.
Hello. I think we got to make this. I would vote for that one to be our ongoing theme song.
Isn't that fun?
I like that.
Yeah.
It's upbeat. It's honky tonk or something.
And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Good.
How you guys doing?
Very good.
Very well.
Very nice. Thank you very much.
Still eating turkey.
Doing what with turkey?
Eating turkey still.
Doing what with turkey? Anything you could imagine.
Making turkey. Anything made from turkey is.
Turkey sandwiches, yeah. Turkey salad, turkey shakes. We're having it all.
Yep.
I had a college buddy put a picture of a turkey ready to go in the oven, sitting on the stove. And I put, hey, I thought Facebook disallowed naked pictures. And honest to God, it was, you know, you do stuff like that and you think it's not funny at all. And people just thought, for some reason, they thought that was hilarious. I've had more comments on that. Just some stupid. Anyway, but
naked.
There are so many people with pictures that I have never seen a Thanksgiving posting like this. It's literally like everybody's posted.
This was very Facebooked, that's for sure.
And Instagram.
Really? Oh, I didn't.
And, yeah.
A lot of turkey pictures, you mean? Or
well, no,
food
just
pictures?
Of people. Well, no, just, I mean, you know, family and friends and people hanging out and, you know, people even serving at soup kitchens and so forth. It's pretty cool. But everybody was documenting it by taking photos and so on.
You know, this social media thing's taken off.
It's going to stick. What do you think, Julio?
I don't know. I'm doubtful.
Doubtful.
So you're not buying Twitter stock is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, he can't anyway, probably.
I'm not in the market, so to speak. You know, journalists don't make enough disposable income to build a massive portfolio. So,
not the good ones anyway. Right?
Well, plus you can't buy any of that because you got to cover the companies.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's against your ethical code. Yeah.
Correct.
Too bad.
I was just looking at the Twitter stock. Obviously, nothing's traded for quite some time, but looks like. Twitter's holding fairly steady.
Oh, yeah. Exciting. Surprisingly.
Stock goes, yeah.
Much better than Facebook did when it
came out. Much better than Facebook, yeah. So,
but not as good as LinkedIn.
No.
LinkedIn's done really well. Well, I mean, I think it's because there's so much participation there, but it's just, and then I thought I'd be so incredibly clever to dump some Apple stock, take a little profit in my 401k. And then it went up $16 after I sold it.
It was just in the last few days that it actually showed a profit for the year, right? Or up for the year.
Yeah,
because it was down so much early.
So it's actually, you know, now it's up. So
yeah,
and they said it would never last.
Oh, definitely.
Well, there were a lot of people in line for those iPads at Target. On Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I saw a headline somewhere that is they're saying it's a tablet year, that's for sure. That seems to be the big gift is some sort of a tablet.
Well, we should get into the Minnesota stories in a minute then and talk about the Black Friday deals, because I went on last night and my wife doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can say this, but I've been looking for one for her, and I just wanted to get the deals, and Target was out yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Not available
but
anymore.
Thursday they had, we were down at the store here in Lakeville, and we waited in line for an hour in the cold, got in, and they must have had 300 in a rack there giving them out.
Wow. So hey, just so everybody knows, Tim has a house full of company.
Well, that's not me, though. That's somebody else.
Who's that?
That's me. That's me. Sorry. I tried walking into a coffee shop, but it's a little too noisy here.
Oh, okay. Everyone, Julio has a whole house full of coffee drinkers.
Polio is on. So are you just wandering aimlessly right now while you're doing the podcast?
Yeah, I didn't want to wake up the family, so I was walking around. I thought I'd go into the coffee shop and warm up, but that's not going to work. It's too noisy.
Oh.
So live from the street, our man on the street, Julio.
Literally.
Literally.
We'll do some roaming interviews as long as you're out there. Yeah.
Are you
on the iPad front? I wrote a story for the paper today about how this year was slightly unusual, actually very unusual, because normally you can't really get any significant discounts on Apple hardware. It's Apple kind of keeps a lid on that. This year the dam kind of broke, and every major retailer was offering some kind of really significant discount with gift cards and so forth.
Right.
And yep. Stephen Baker, you know, the well-known analyst at the NPD Group, he and I were actually thinking along similar lines, which is you know, very rare. I'm not usually that smart, but I called him up and asked him, hey, you know, I'm not always the sharpest knife in the drawer, but it seems to me this year is kind of unusual for iPad discounts. You kind of think the same thing? And he said, oh, yeah, I'm writing a blog post about that. It's just it's just kind of an unprecedented thing this year.
Yeah, I noticed that both the old iPad mini and the new iPad Air, the big one, those had the significant discounts, but the iPad mini with Retina didn't. So that suggests that that's a real heavy seller.
Or it's still constrained, right, Julio?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the likely scenario. The iPad 2 and the Air were the ones that had like gift card promotions attached to them and so forth.
Yeah, but my son bought one at Target. They had hundreds there, and he got his $100 gift card. So it ended up being $379, I think, plus tax. So that was a good deal.
But the discounts, triggered a lot of demand, and I wrote stories about people that, you know, we're trying to get the deals, but had a hard time finding them. There's a little bit of a frenzy out there for the iPads, and it was just kind of interesting. So the funny thing is, I went out to the Mall of America to witness this frenzy for myself, but I might have timed it wrong, or maybe the facility is just too large. But you know, even on Black Friday, the Mall of America looks like a regular weekend. So I was kind of amused at that. I was expecting, you know, hand-to-hand combat, and you know, everybody was just kind of milling around. So,
I think you get into the hand-to-hand combat stuff when you go to places like Walmart and Target. You know, Walmart, it's sort of a no-holes-barred sort of thing at Walmart. But
I've noticed that. I try to keep my Walmart shopping to an absolute minimum because it's crazy.
We've cut it out completely. So.
I went to the one down here, the Walmart, and it was very organized, and they gave out wristbands and everything for big items, and you had to pick up the TV in the back, you know, like drive around to the back of the store. And then I think yesterday there were a bunch of videos posted on Business Insider and a bunch of other blogs. Huffington Post, I think, had a few of like fights that have broken out at Walmarts over TVs.
Oh, geez. Unbelievable.
So they should adopt that wristband thing in line deal, because it was very sedate. There wasn't a huge problem there.
Well, what was interesting was I went out, or I was looking, and I'm going to wait until Cyber Monday now, but I've been looking for just a down and dirty, cheap, decent Android tablet. And so I spent, I would bet, an hour and a half to 2 hours looking online and looking at the Trio tablet and the Nobby and the Visual Land Prestige Android tablet and yada yada yada. You know, they run ice cream sandwich, or they don't tell you what they run, or and it was just, honest to God, I could not figure out what I would even be interested in buying.
Yeah, I don't think you want any of those. No. I'm sure Julio has an opinion too, but I would say if you're going to buy a down and dirty low end Android tablet, get a Nook HD, which can be had for $80 or less, and then run Cyanogen Mod on it, where you get Jelly Bean and hopefully KitKat soon. And that makes a very good sub $100 Android tablet.
Yeah, because I just want to get one to play with.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Average consumers don't even need to do that modification because the Nook HD, unlike the Amazon Kindle Fire tablets, gives you full access to the Google Play Store. So,
and I read I read that in a new book, but we'll get to that later.
Steve, I would strongly recommend you look for a first generation Nexus 7, which can still be had.
Yeah.
Those you can get down to about $130. And I still have my first generation. It's running KitKat, runs fine. So if you just want to get something to play around with,
I want to do something where I can live in the Android ecosystem for a period of time and try things out.
Nexus is
okay.
But I'm impressed with the Nook HD, though. I think for that price, the hardware is very nice.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. By the way, who just snickered?
That was me.
Thanks, Phil. Well,
I want to live in the ecosystem.
Well, dude, I do.
He wants to live in Android.
I can read all about it. I can watch all the videos. But if you don't actually sit in it and play with the apps and try things out, you can't. Right, Julio? You'd have to do that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but I've never heard Julio use the phrase "live in the ecosystem."
Uh-huh. Well, no, Phil, we're living the Android lifestyle.
That's exactly. That's what we do. We live
iOS lifestyle. So given
that Phil, you and I are in that Android lifestyle, did your one get the KitKat update yet?
No, not yet.
Ah, that's a bummer. My Nexus 4 did. It's very nice.
Everything's a little slower in the Sprint world. And speaking of which, and I haven't had a chance to really research this or spend any time with the Sprint folks, but the last time I was in with, I was having problems being able to connect to data on my HTC One with Sprint. And I got the excuse of, or the explanation of them, you know, working on the 4G network here, and it's causing problems that sometimes the data doesn't work. And that has continued to be a problem. I was, I found it a real problem lately, being able to access data via my One on the Sprint network because of all the 4G work that's going on.
Really?
So I
actually have to shut down the phone, restart it, and then it'll connect to 4G. Everything was fine. And if I move or something, you know, I'll lose that signal and I'll have to reboot again. So.
And frustrated about LTE not coming to Sprint yet?
Oh yeah, it's very frustrating. Obviously they're working on it, but it's still very flawed between 3G and 4G, and it's incredibly frustrating.
I have two words. So I have two words for you. Canon cat.
You and your Canon cat.
Right, Graham? We're going to stick with a Canon cat. Forget this Android and iOS.
I'm sticking with my QCAT. That's what I'm sticking with.
That's right. You know what, Julio? When you said that to me, Julio, in the email about the QCAT, I actually started digging through my office closet. I think I've got a QCAT that I can.
All right. Oh, interesting. You guys have to explain what a Canon cat to QCAT is.
Okay, a Canon.
People I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'll put links in the show notes, but a Canon cat. Was Jeff Raskin, the brains behind the development of the original Macintosh, developed something in the late 80s called the Canon Cat, and it was a computer. It was all text based, and it was supposed to be an appliance. It was cheap and all that. Never really did very well. The QCAT was an item that plugged into a serial port. It was a wand that plugged into your serial port, and it was shaped like a cat. And you could scan barcodes in magazines. And I was a subscriber to Forbes at the time, and they would ship out these QCATs. And so I got a QCAT from them, and then from somebody else, I got a QCAT. So I had a couple of them. Maybe it was Wired, yeah. And the whole point is that obviously the company that made the QCAT was going to make billions from every swipe. You know, they get a fraction of a penny for every swipe, and they'd make all this money, and it never went anywhere. So
I don't think I ever used mine.
So now when you hear this joke, when you listen,
now to it'll the, be maybe the, go back. Hilarious.
If you're listening to the podcast, go ahead and go back and listen to it, and it'll be a lot funnier.
Thanks, Phil.
Don't think so.
You know, that's probably what sets our podcast apart from anybody. We will reference things from the computer world that other podcasts never experienced.
And you can rewind and just laugh your ass off.
It's like, you know, watching those bits of Saturday Night Live on YouTube over and over.
Exactly.
We ought to just do that. The best of. We'll cut together the best of moments from the mid of eight. You know, the real yucks that we really have here. So,
yeah, give me more cowbell.
Give me. Julio, since Julio is wandering around,
freezing,
we ought to talk to him about his.
Yeah, can you hear the dogs barking?
Yeah. Are you at the dog park now?
No, I'm just kind of wandering around my block. One of my neighbors is walking her dog. So
there you go.
Why don't you just yell, hey, I'm on a podcast. Tell the dog to shut up.
that's rewind worthy.
Oh, how great.
So Julio, the prolific writer that he is and author of many handy books, you have a new book out. The Mobile Writer. Am I correct, sir?
I heard something about that. Yeah.
Well,
you did.
Okay. Yes. Rumor has it.
And you actually wrote the whole thing. You did not have an infinite number of monkeys.
That's right.
Pounding out text, right?
Well, I had these fantastic ghostwriters in India that helped me a little bit, but I'm just kidding.
I've outsourced my writing.
Yeah. Yeah, but every time I set out to write a book, I swear I'll never do it again because it's just it seems like a reasonable fun thing to do, but then once you get into it, it's really hard. Especially in this case, my book is about people that want to use mobile devices for writing. You know, everything from an iPad to a Chromebook, an Android tablet to a Surface. So I sort of dedicated the book to the proposition that people want to be productive on their mobile devices, but many people might not know how to go about it. They don't know what the best writing apps are, what Bluetooth keyboards to get for their Android tablets or their iPads. And it's a fun topic. It's just as I was writing the book, it's sort of tricky to sort of keep up with product updates. I sort of timed the book so it would appear at the very end of the year. You know, when all the big product announcements are hitting. So the book is very carefully timed, but you know, it's tricky because you have to sort of keep up with even minor updates. Like Acer released a touchscreen Chromebook. Just a couple of weeks after my book came out. So the publisher and I are going to go back for the iBook version of the book, which hasn't come out yet, and sort of stick that information in there. So it was a challenging book because you have to sort of keep up with all the product stuff.
Well, I was really, first of all, I thought it was a really comprehensive look at not just writing, but mobile content creation, even though that was not your focus because that's a much broader topic, but you touched a little bit on blog software and all that kind of stuff. And I'll just tell people it'll be the best $3 you've ever spent to get a copy of it. But I need to also warn people that you'll spend more money because there's an app called Textilus, the RTF, you know, the real rich text format app. So I went out and I bought that. It's in your book, it says $6, but they had a Black Friday sale and it was only $3.99.
Yeah.
Ooh, there you go.
And then I bought Simple Note just because I thought that would be an easy text one to buy. So I've actually expanded my investment, but I really liked how you put all these links in here too.
Yeah. So I wanted to be like really, really comprehensive. Like earlier this year, somebody released a book, you know, if you want to write on your iPad, and that, you know, it was a decent little book, but I was, you know, trying to be really ambitious and, you know, cover all the major mobile device platforms. And it was one of those situations where I wanted sort of to tap in to my comprehensive grounding, you know, and all these technologies that I've been writing about as a tech writer for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And And so I had, you know, keyboard, you know, tablet keyboard cases, you know, sort of flowing into my home office and playing with the surfaces and all the latest Chromebooks. It was a lot of fun for me, as a gadget geek, but I'm also a little OCD, and I like order. I like neatness. I like tidiness. And at one point, you know, I was in my home office and it was like surrounded, you know, by piles of these gadgets. And then I was like, what have I done?
But you know,
is the book only available in Kindle form right now?
Yeah, very briefly, it's an Amazon exclusive, but then they're going to release a print version and in an iBook version. So that's coming soon. My publisher made the decision of going Amazon first. I sort of leave those decisions up to him, but it'll eventually be available everywhere.
So of that $2.99, what do you suppose you'll see as far as a percentage that will go to the author? Just out of curiosity, what do you usually see when you publish a book, and especially when you publish it via, you know, new technology or relatively new technology such as the Kindle only sort of version? I mean, what do authors usually make from the price of a given book?
Well, if you go with a traditional publisher, in many cases, especially if you're not a really well-known author, the percentage of what the author specifically gets for a book is often kind of puny. The publisher I dealt with for my previous two books, and the publisher I'm dealing with now, which is the same publisher that releases the books by a fellow we all know, Patrick Rohn. Mm-hmm. These guys, they're sort of small boutique kind of operations, and they treat the authors they deal with more as peers rather than peons. And I'm not sure my publisher wants me to go into the details, but the terms are quite generous.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty happy with that. And in addition, the publisher that I'm dealing with right now, I was okay with the publisher I had before for my previous two books, but I had a little bit of a problem with him because he was pushing books like widgets. I don't want to name the company, but very nice guy, very sharp businessman, you know, very supportive of his authors. But I got to the point where I sort of felt he wasn't really invested in what I was writing about, the content.
Yeah.
He could have been selling, you know, lug nuts for all of that. And so the Randall Murray, the guy I'm dealing with now, is, he's very selective. He sort of lives in the mech geekdom the way I do. And he's very, very knowledgeable about the subject matter that I was writing about. And it was a great collaboration because he gave me a lot of really insightful suggestions about things that I should do that I hadn't thought of. So his fingerprints are on that book to a large extent. And it was great. It's a fantastic guy to deal with.
Well, here's the book description, guys. Have you read the book description on Amazon? Get real writing done with iPads, iPhones, Android devices, Chromebooks, and other mobile hardware. I love this, in parentheses, including Microsoft Surface. Learn how top journalists, authors, and public relations professionals write using an array of mobile gadgets, or as it says here, gadgets. Get recommendations on the best mobile hardware, software, apps, and accessories, all from one of the top technology journalists working today, Julio Ojeda Zapata from TwinCities.com and the St. Paul Pioneer Press. This book is a great holiday gift guide for tablet and Chromebook shoppers. So there you go.
You know what? Actually, that was one of my impressions was, because I read the whole thing, the only thing that I skimmed kind of was the Windows hardware one.
That's pretty much what everybody's doing with it.
Well, yeah. But I actually started going through it again this morning, just the Windows chapter, because I didn't just sort of skim that one. But I read the rest of it, and a couple of things really stood out. Well, a few things really stood out. One was you mentioned that you're in your 50s, and I thought, no way. So that was the first thing. The second thing was, Patrick Roan, who did the foreword, I have to totally watch him type on his smartphone, do long form writing. I have to look over his shoulder and watch him do that. That just amazed me.
Oh, you can. Actually, you sort of can. I shot some video.
Did you? Okay.
Interviewing him about his iPhone writing habits and about his iPad writing habits. There's actually video of this that I'm going to post on the book site, which is a little late in getting up. But yeah, I did. This wasn't for the book. This was a while ago that okay. I was interviewing under different circumstances. But it ties in very nicely. And the man is a total machine. Just unbelievable.
Well, so the last impression was, even though I think this was inadvertent, what I took away from it as well was you really do touch on workflow when you're talking about the cloud and how you're leveraging. Well, in Apple's case, you can leverage iCloud now, but leveraging Google Drive and so on. And so there was this whole workflow piece that sort of stood out. And the other thing was really making decisions on what kind of device, because if you think about writing, if the device isn't really fluent and a good experience for writing, it's not going to be a good experience for anything else.
Yeah. So. But it was, the whole writing on mobile devices is huge. I mean, it's been huge since Apple released the first iPad back in 2010. And Steve Jobs on stage at the Yerba Buena auditorium unveiled iWork, you know, with Pages. It's been a thing since then. And people, you know, ever since that day have been trying to squeeze productivity out of their mobile devices. But the problem is it's not as easy as sort of, you know, buying a MacBook and sort of flipping it open, you know, and starting to write. There's sometimes you have to put some thought into how you put your hardware together. And it works if you do it the right way. And it's also, you know, for some people, yeah, myself included, and I say this in the book, it's not something that comes naturally necessarily, because I'm a Mac geek from way back when, and I'm really, really comfortable. You know, hand me a MacBook Air and I'm giddy and trying to do some of the same productivity things on an iPad. It sometimes feels a little unnatural to me. And that's kind of why I wanted to write the book. I wanted to force myself to do something that I know a lot of people want to do that I, under normal circumstances, don't necessarily, you know, want to do all the time.
Yeah.
So I kind of force myself, you know, this is what, you know, what writers, nonfiction book writers sometimes need to do. They sort of need to sort of jam themselves into situations they normally wouldn't get into and just kind of learn. And that was a fun experience for me. And it's really important to do, because a lot of people are making a decision based on dollars. Like the MacBook, the 11-inch MacBook Air is my favorite mobile computer. But you do the math, it costs twice as much as a tablet. So people are saying, okay, the MacBook Air 11 is a real computer. The iPad also is a real computer. You can do almost everything you can do on the tablet that you can do on the computer, but it's a lot cheaper. So people are going to be making these decisions, you know, based on economics. But then when they make the decision, they're going to get really frustrated, because there's a little more thought goes into putting these pieces together in order to create a sort of productivity situation.
Yeah.
That's where my book comes in. I sort of walk them through all the options.
So Julio, your first book was several years ago, and it was right after the first iPad came out or about a year after, I guess. And you talked about doing productivity work on the iPad. And now it's what, 4 years later or so, 3 or 4 years later. How has that changed? Are the apps completely different that you'd use in a writing mode there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Although to clarify, the iPad Means Business book I wrote a while ago was sort of a business book. I was sort of like interviewing companies and sort of getting their stories about what the different things are using iPads for. My current book is more of a how-to book for consumers who need to make purchasing decisions and might not be familiar with all the same products. So there are different kinds of books, but specifically to your question, I remember very clearly back roughly around the time I I wrote that business book, I would go on business trips for the Pioneer Press, and I would take an iPad as my primary computer, just because it was lightweight and had a good battery life. And I remember being very, very, very frustrated. Like, for instance, when I wanted to blog, I wanted to post to my my WordPress-based Pioneer Press blog, and sort of thrusting myself into a situation where I had to do that. I had to blog from the iPad. It just kind of dawned on me, wow, there aren't any really good blogging apps for the iPad. I mean, the blogging app situation just completely sucks. And I was very frustrated. I had to do weird things like posting to Posterous, which doesn't exist anymore. But Posterous had this thing where you could post Posterous, and then it would repost automatically to other platforms. So I had to do those kinds of weird things. And specifically to your question, Tim, now it's a whole different situation, because the productivity app selection for iPad now is just exponentially better. I mean, there are a whole bunch of really good blogging apps. For instance, there's Blogsy, which is fantastic, a whole bunch of others. Yeah, just kind of name your app category, and you're going to find some really good stuff out there. Specifically to the point of my book, writing apps in various categories. There's distraction-free apps. There's apps that sort of mimic Office. A writing app in almost every category, you're going to have just tons and tons of choices out there. And so once you make the right hardware buying decisions and you sit down and actually get down to writing on one of these devices, you're going to have a really good experience, because the apps are just really, really fantastic. I have to qualify that by saying that's mostly on the iOS side. Things are a little skimpier on the Android side, but you'll still find what you want. Like Google recently made QuickOffice free. QuickOffice is a fantastic little office-like app that sort of can handle Word files and so on.
And it actually, yeah, I tried it because of your book and was surprised about how nice it is.
Yeah, and that's a good app if you're like dealing with a lot of Word files. And I think Google still needs to work on the aesthetics. It's still kind of ugly. But I live in the Google Apps ecosystem, so I'm Google Apps all the way. And so, and Google recently also did some major upgrades to its Google Drive app for the iPad. That's the point I make in the book. Way back when, trying to use Google Docs on an iPad was a nightmare. There was no app for that purpose. You had to do it directly in the browser, but the iPad browser couldn't really handle the web interface for Google Docs. It would keep throwing you into sort of a simplified interface that wasn't very good. So doing Google Apps on an iPad, I remember very clearly, was so bad, I just refused to do it. And so that completely ruled out the iPad as a productivity device for me, because like I said, I'm all Google Apps all the way. Now, the Google Drive app for both Android and iOS is wonderful. It's just wonderful. It's not doesn't give you like a massive amount of formatting tools the way Apple's Pages would, but for the basic kind of writing that you would do in a browser on a PC or a Mac, the Google Drive app is very elegant, very nice looking, has all the controls you need, works the same on iOS as Android. Google doesn't discriminate. And recently they added a thing where you have multiple account support. I have a Google-based account for work, and I also have my home Google Apps account. And now I can switch very easily between them in the Google Drive app. And I'm absolutely giddy, because that's exactly what I need.
I'm wondering, and maybe that we should save this for the predictions show for 2014. But, I keep looking at the Google search app, and I'm struck by the fact about how simple it would be for them to integrate everything that they're doing now into a single app that would essentially act like a Chromebook on your iPad, that everything would be integrated in there, and they would, you could just literally live in the Google experience, and, you know, 90% of the time without leaving the app.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation about how Chrome OS could be sort of a layer, how you could use an Android device to run Chrome OS, and I think the opposite has been speculated about how to do exactly the opposite, how to run Android on Chrome OS. There's been a lot of talk about that, a lot of frustration among some people that there are these two completely different mobile operating systems. And that's an interesting idea. I think, though, Android and Chrome OS, you know, solve specific and different problems. I like having both of them available. So, but what you describe, it already happens to a way, because if you're in the Google search app, you have access to all the Google tools, just kind of the mobile web-based versions of them, but they're all there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the one thing that, you know, we did have some Minnesota stories we should cover, but it kind of is a nice segue, because there's a yet another and new upscale co-working space that's going to open up in Edina. And when you think about people being mobile, you know, it's not just a matter of, hey, I happen to be traveling or I'm out and about for now. It's also I'm in a different space, and I'm not at home in front of my iMac or desktop computer. And so there's it's not just Coco, and there was another one, that I can't remember
Jewel.
The name of
Jewel.
Yeah.
Jewel.
And now this new one, Cafe Inc, which is,
started by a guy named Funk.
Funk,
so why
yeah.
don't they call it Funky Cafe?
That could
know.
Be. That could be good.
Cafe Inc. is sort of blah, but
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out where it is near 494 and 100. That's
I'm
right in my stomping grounds.
Maybe
there's a whole bunch of office parks right in there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's in there. But they said they wanted in mall or strip mall locations with free parking. So, I don't know what's there,
but I'll have to go check it out when I figure out which building it's in. The article that ran has no link to a website that I can see.
No,
for Cafe Inc. So maybe we can find one. I don't know if it exists or not.
I'll put a link in the show notes, because I got pinged by the people that are opening that facility directly, and I've been meaning to do a blog item on that. I put that on the back burner because they're not exactly in the Pioneer Press circulation area, but. Yeah, I got pinged directly by these people, and apparently they have some fairly ambitious plan. I was a little unclear at first whether they were kind of a franchise of a national operation somewhere else. They're homegrown, but they have some fairly interesting expansion plans. So,
yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Huh. Well,
becoming also, a big business.
Yeah. Well, also there's It was just nice to see this article in Twin Cities Business about new biz expansions to bring 1,500 Minnesota jobs. And, you know, it is, things are growing. Things are moving in the right direction. It's just taking a lot longer than any of us would like. But that was good. Proto Labs adding 100 jobs in Plymouth. Data Card. Is relocating to Shakopee. Shakopee's on fire with technology companies.
Yep.
Adding 150 jobs so that's great.
Yeah, Shutterfly was the big one out there too. That
right.
facility that'll employ nearly 330, it says.
Well, we had a good family friend that ran the Seagate facility out in Shakopee, and I always kept bugging them to see if I could get a tour, and the answer was always no, we don't give tours. So they must be doing something in there that needs security clearance, and with all the skeletons in my closet There'd be no way.
I thought they just rejected you personally.
Yeah, they probably did. We've read your blog. We don't want you in here.
Right. Yeah.
Steve, it's funny that you mentioned that because one of my longtime goals as a tech writer. I've sort of set it aside because it started to become kind of old hat at this point. One of my goals as a tech writer was always to get a tour of a local Netflix disk processing facility.
Hmm.
And that was on my tech writer bucket list for years and years, and I kept bugging them about it, and it never happened. So I'm kind of disappointed that never came to pass. But I recently wrote this other story about Colorware and Winona. You guys know those guys?
Oh, love their stuff. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Colorware. A long time ago, I did a story about Colorware for the paper, and at that time, you know, I asked them for a tour of their painting facilities, and they were like, no, you know, top secret. We don't want to give anything away to our competitors. Absolutely not. You know, they flat out refused. And recently, I decided I wanted to revisit Colorware because, unlike that time long ago, now. I do a lot of video work, and in addition to writing, I shoot a lot of video for the paper. And suddenly, I don't remember when the light bulb went off my head, but it was like, I should revisit Colorware because I could take a camera down there and shoot some really awesome video of them, you know, doing their thing. But they're probably going to say no, you know, but it doesn't hurt to ask. So I didn't even mention the article I wrote a long time ago. I just say, hey, can I come down with a camera and shoot some video? And they didn't answer right away, but eventually the answer was in the affirmative. So that was kind of fun. I did a kind of a refresh story, you know, sort of bringing people up to date with all the latest Colorware stuff. That story ran in the Pioneer Press a couple of Sundays ago. And then on my website, there was this nifty little edited produced video that I did, you know, with some salsa music and so forth. And that was a lot of fun, and I got to meet the Colorware people in person, which I hadn't done before. They're absolutely wonderful bunch of people. You know, very laid back. You know, very Minnesotan. I wasn't sure what to expect, and what I found down there was completely not what I expected. It's just a lot smaller than I expected, but they don't need a lot of infrastructure to do their thing. But they're just a really, really super, super nice bunch of people. And I get a couple of their staffers on video, and that was one of the more interesting stories I've done in a long time.
Well, you know, one of the things that those of us that worked for Apple and have been in the technology game here for a really long time is that Winona is an atypically strong technology district for K-12, and then mm-hmm. also for Winona State, and you know, Minnesota State College is down there. Very, very progressive in terms of technology, and surprisingly so. Plus, it's just a great town. So it's kind of cool that they're down there.
Yeah, and they've been doing this for quite a while. It's they're very well established, and apparently doing very, very well.
How many people do they employ, would you say?
My memory is failing me, so I can't remember. It's not a, again, like I said, I went down there expecting this sprawling facility, and it's actually this small little cluster of buildings. So it doesn't have a whole ton of people, but these are all very well, I don't know how well they're paid, but they're very well trained people. Each person that works down there has very specific, very sophisticated skills. Like there's device disassembly people. There's machining people. There's a laser engraving area. There's a sort of a clean room, you know, sort of like Intel. And so you go down there. I was kind of struck by how sharp, how incredibly well trained and tech savvy all these people are. The woman who does press outreach doubles as. This was very unexpected. The Colorware seamstress, because they're starting to branch out into sleeves, you know, custom made protection sleeves and leather and so forth for mm. the devices. And so this woman who's my PR contact, she also has this I found this really interesting, this big, sewing facility with state-of-the-art sewing machines and so forth. And that's kind of her shtick, and she was really proud of it.
Huh. Cool.
Well, another interesting story was all of the Twin Cities Google Glass users that you wrote a week or so ago.
Yeah, I had no idea there were so many.
Yeah, why do you think there's so many users in the area, Julio?
Yeah, there are quite a lot, and the number's increasing now because the original Google Glass Explorers now can invite other people, so the ranks are growing. But I set a goal for myself to meet as many of these people as I could in coffee shops and restaurants and so forth. And I had kind of a routine. I would meet them, and then I'd open my iPad and iPad keyboard and interview them and, you know, take notes the way I normally do. But then I did an additional thing, which is a little unusual. I then asked them, can I sort of prop my elbows on the table and hold up an iPhone 5S and shoot some video of you recapping some of the high points of our conversations, and just kind of interview these people so they can sort of tell me about their experiences and about their passion for the device. They're very, you know, they're very into Google Glass. And what I found interesting is normally if I point a camera at people, they sort of freeze up and sort of get robotic. But all these local Google Glass users are so excited about what they're doing with the device that I got these great, you know, just, it's just talking head. All these videos are just a talking head, you know, of a person talking about Google Glass, but they got really animated, really excited. And so I literally have dozens of these videos. You know, I would interview somebody on video for 5 minutes and sort of slice and dice it into 45 second tout videos, the tout service that the Pioneer Press uses. So I threw up a whole bunch of these videos. I created a hashtag so that if you search for that hashtag on tout, you get all of the videos all in one stream. And you can sort of go through video after video, and it's really, really interesting. So I did a story about this, and then on my website, I embedded a tout widget that has all these interview videos. And most of the interviews in my story are from those videos, in fact. So it was really interesting. And I had fun just doing that because it sort of humanizes a very techy, nerdy kind of a story. You guys know Josh Bratton?
No.
Josh Bratton, he's a local geek. He works in education, high tech. His video was the best because you'll have to watch the video, but he told me the story about how he had picked up Google Glass in Silicon Valley, and he was at the airport really excited with a device, and he was headed home, and he was in the terminal, and there was this other guy walking towards him in the opposite direction. And Steve, you might want to bleep what I'm going to say, but they kind of passed each other, and as the guy passed Josh, he sort of muttered under his breath, "Dick."
And then did that guy have Google Glass on?
You'll have to watch the video because I'm not really capturing the humor. But then Josh kind of turned around and looked at the guy, and Josh had this expression on his face like, "Really?" And the guy turned around and, you know, with a lot of emphasis, he told Josh, "Yeah." And it's super funny. That was the best video of the bunch. But I got a lot of those videos where people were just so excited that they told me these really great stories.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, so we should probably get close to wrapping up here, but I didn't want to pass without talking about what might be coming up for Cyber Monday. I don't know about you guys, but this has just been, besides people posting photos like mad in an unprecedented volume, honest to God, companies that I haven't heard from for probably 2 years were sending me their Black Friday deal emails. And with everybody starting earlier and all the stuff going on online, and it's just been overwhelming. And so there's been a little bit that's come out pumping Cyber Monday, but of course it's not as big as Black Friday. But is there anything that stands out for any of you guys?
Everything's all about TVs. I mean, just everything's TVs, 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 mm-hmm. TVs.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We bought a TV this year, a new one. The deals were just so good. And
how big did you go there, Tim? How big?
Well, we have in our new house, we have this box that's above the fireplace, and the box is 39 inches wide. So the biggest that we could get is 40 inch, which is about 36 and some change wide. So it fits in the box, but no, it's good. But what was interesting is I had been watching the deals, and of course, as in years past, or recent years past anyway, all of the ads get leaked early, you know, and in some cases months early or a month early. So you know what's going to, all the doorbusters are going to be long beforehand. And what I found was a week before Black Friday, some of the deals started to happen. So Samsung had a promotion where all of their prices were the same, whether you bought it on Black Friday or, in our case, we bought it on Monday. So, I think that retailers are just, they're discounting the stuff. And this year, because there's Thanksgiving is late, so there's 1 week less of shopping time for the holiday. Mm-hmm. They're doing their deals faster, you know, earlier. And people are probably, you know, stretching out their spending a little bit, even though the early results that I've seen following retail are very strong, especially for the big box guys, Target and Walmart and Best Buy. From Friday, Thursday and Friday. So we'll have to see what really happens, but I'd expect more of the same. As Phil said, more TVs, you know, I think Monday though, you're going to see a lot more, other kinds of items besides just electronics, also being sold at a discount.
iPad situation that I mentioned earlier, all the iPad deals, many of those were available, you know, well prior to Thanksgiving. So that's a good point.
Well, I'll put some links in the show notes to the Verge's article, and then Amazon, Best Buy, and then Overstock.com. And of course there's tons of others, but,
no matter what you're shopping for, definitely go online and take a look
and don't pay retail.
Here's my question. How many people, go out on Black Friday to buy, that are actually buying gifts for people as opposed to buying stuff for themselves? I mean,
I think a lot of people actually,
yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, I think all the times that I've ever gone out on Black Friday, and, you know, since my daughter turned shopping age, we always go. So, but I think we've always, you know, I would say 80% of what we bring home is stuff that we wanted for, you know, we're not buying as a gift.
Well, that's because you're selfish.
I was just kind of curious. Go on, like Tim bought a TV.
That's because he's selfish.
Yeah, no, we bought a TV. Yeah. Well, no, we actually, because we needed one, actually. That was the reason. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Our other one was really old. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually buying for everyone else. That's all I ever do. I just give all my money away.
That's so true of you, Steve. And in fact, I could use 20 if you could send it my way.
Sure,
That'd be great. Thanks, yeah. Appreciate it.
I was thinking about just, you know, giving you a new... audio interface.
How about just giving me some of that Apple stock? That would be fine too.
Okay. All right. That's easy. So yeah, I'm wondering,
that'll happen.
So I'm wondering what's next. Thrifty Tuesday, Wacky Wednesday. What's coming next? You think
you're going to see it, whatever it is, you're going to see it, because I think the retailers are going to pull all the stops out this year to try to make their year a better one than it's been.
Are we seeing sort of the end of Black Friday though? Is this the beginning of the end for Black Friday? Cause I mean, they're, you know, it's getting so close to not being closed at all for the holiday.
Well, there's no,
yeah,
book, there's
I mean,
no
the,
bookends.
I mean, the, yeah. I mean, the whole, a whole, situation where, you know, Cyber Monday is just Cyber Monday and Black Friday is just Black Friday. That's all getting very diluted because, you know, Black Friday is actually the whole week now, with a lot of the retailers opening on Thanksgiving and a lot of the deals available really early. And all the significance of these very specific days is getting to the point where they don't really mean anything. They're sort of catchphrases that really mean, you know, okay, we're in this shopping season, and during the, you know, this this broader and broader period of time, you can find the deals. And so we're no longer at the point where you have to like camp out at a Best Buy you want to get that, you know, really nifty deal where I don't, we're getting to the point where that is losing all meaning. So
yeah,
it's black forever now, baby.
That's right. So yep. Anyway, yeah. And then there's, do they don't really have a name for the day after Christmas where all the returns come in, do they?
Boxing Day.
December 26th.
Right. It's Boxing Day in England. Come on.
Boxing Day.
That's where you give all your staff. You give all your servants their presents on Boxing Day.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Over there at...
So you don't watch Downton Abbey,
I was going to say over there at Elliot Abbey. Over there at Tim Elliot Abbey.
That will be all right. I don't go near any stores on that day. Oh, my gosh. The return line. Oh, God.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting a little hungry for turkey. I'm having a little tryptophan withdrawal, so I'm gonna hop off and get some food and have some leftovers. And so we'll cover what happens in the week to come and talk to you more on next week's
Men of Eight Gang podcast.
There it is. Wait a minute. Let me do that
again.
Okay,
we'll do it again. All right.
Next week on
the Men of Eight Gang podcast.
Ooh.
All right.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, fumbled.
Hey, by the way, real quick, I'm so sorry. Julio.
Yeah.
What were you using today for a Skype app? Because it sounds awesome, especially if you're walking around outside.
Walking around, yeah.
Oh, the same thing I did last year. Just, you know, your basic iPhone with iPad, Apple earbuds. That's it.
Really? Wow. It sounds fantastic. And then just the Skype app, right?
Yeah, I've been like circling the block as I talk to you guys, and I'm headed towards Super America right now, and that's basically it. So I'm surprised it sounded so good.
It does. I'm seriously impressed. Normally we just don't have, maybe it's that you're near a great tower and it's so early that everyone's sleeping.
And not using Sprint.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
No, but AT&T is pretty good. People are really down on the Apple, specifically Apple earbuds, but there's some nifty little technology built into those devices. I mean, they're high, the way they sound in your ear isn't necessarily that great, but just generally they're pretty pretty well designed devices, and they're what I've been using to talk to you guys for the past few appearances, and it's worked out pretty well.
Sounds great. Yeah. All right.
Well, okay, thanks, now guys. We'll do it. See you next week on
the Men of Eight Gang podcast. Take care.
Have a good one. Guys.
See
you. Bye.
Yep. Bye. Take care.
Have you home by 8.
Wine, women, song, all night long. Wine, women, and song, we'll be singing and dancing all night long.
I saw Crazy Joe with the greasy spoon. Marge is getting ready, been out since noon. Yeah, the gang's gearing up for big fun tonight. They'll be rocking and swinging, dancing all night. You got the blues, baby, don't sit tight. Come on with us for a real fun ride.
joint. It was 3:30. I saw two fine ladies, man, they were looking at me. Grabbing by the arm, we were out on the floor. Rocking and swinging till 4:08. The cops came in and shut us down. We got to go to another side of town. And blowing out.